could smoke the slugs. To the white folks who watched, he was a revolutionary
It's WGXC 90.7 FM.
Right.
Accra.
Keep going.
Hudson, Catskill, Phoenicia, and lots of other places.
That's an interesting addition.
And Valencia.
And
or
Valencia.
As they usually call it when you first land in Columbia County.
Valati.
Valati.
Very well done. Did you mention the online way
and online at WGXC.org.
Yes.
Way Farms WGXC always needs computer donations. If you have one and don't need it, and it's a Macintosh 2019 or newer, please email info@WGXC.org for more information. Thank you for your contribution.
Way Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of William Cheston of Newark, New Jersey. WGXC supporters care deeply about Creative Community Radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to WGXC.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
WGXC underwriting is provided in part by Upstate Films, a nonprofit theater presenting Sonic Wave, an ongoing music and sound-rich series screening in a new Atmos theater at the Orpheum in Saugerties every Monday night. This month, some of the films playing include Bjork, Cornucopia, The Replacements, Color Me Impressed, and Hello, My Name is Blotto. Information about screenings and special guests at upstatefilms.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. In a recent report from Georgia, we told you about voters contesting a mass voter eligibility challenge by election group True the Vote. In another 11th Circuit courtroom that same week, a group of black voters challenged the voting districts for Metro Atlanta. The Georgia Recorder reports that a judge ruled in 2021 that after the 2020 U.S. Census, the Georgia legislature failed to account for the growth of black voters in Metro Atlanta and needed to include additional majority-minority congressional, state house, and state senate districts. The current suit before a three-judge appeals panel contends that the court-ordered maps drawn by the legislature in 2023 may not have met the judge's requirements and instead kept the status quo. Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger's brief contends that the Voting Rights Act Section 2 should no longer be in use. He argues that the plaintiffs must prove that the motivation for the maps was racial discrimination, not legal under the federal VRA, and not for partisan political reasons, which the U.S. Supreme Court has ruled is inherently a state issue. Anti-voter arguments citing the Equal Protection Clause and it was political, not racial gerrymandering, are increasing in an effort to neutralize VRA protections for minority voters. Expect an opinion in the case in the coming months. We have more on the long history of the case at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. Find us on Blue Sky at Democracy Minute.
Welcome to 2025 Talks. We're following our democracy in historic times.
I've always had the greatest admiration for Canada's unique identity, which is recognized across the world for bravery and sacrifice in defense of national values.
Speaking before Canada's parliament, the UK's King Charles says the country faces a critical moment and must defend its democracy and sovereignty. In a speech written by the Prime Minister's office, Charles did not directly cite President Donald Trump's hope to make Canada part of the US. On Tuesday, Trump said Canada can either pay $61 billion to be covered by his proposed Golden Dome missile defense system or be covered for free as the 51st state. Unlike the northern neighbor, many in Puerto Rico and Washington, D.C. have worked feverishly to become states. Some in D.C. statehood movement now say the district should become part of Maryland to get voting representation in Congress. While they say it's not ideal for residents, they point to Trump's threats to overturn the district's local government and run the city himself. America's growing isolationism may have benefits, according to Peter Mendelsohn, the British ambassador to the United States. He credits Trump's acute political instinct for identifying global trends in the U.S. and abroad. He says countries can't risk economic fragmentation, but must come together to reboot transatlantic alliances.
We need to devote an enormous amount of energy and goodwill to preserve, sustain, and deepen the alliances which exist between like-minded countries.
Meanwhile, NASA's Goddard Institute for Space Studies will close at the end of May. More than 100 people working for NASA, Columbia University, and as contractor employees are being forced out as part of the Trump administration's efforts to cut federal spending. Matt Biggs with the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers notes some members of Congress want to keep the facility open. He says it would take congressional action or the courts, and says even those would have uncertain results.
We're dealing with a rogue and lawless administration. They seem to turn a blind eye to Congress. Like I said, this facility is funded. It's funded in an appropriations bill. It's funded through the NASA funding.
In the latest White House budget, NASA would lose a quarter of its funding, which cuts support for scientific research. But NASA's lease at the Goddard Institute is locked in, and moving out early would likely cost taxpayers around $3 million a year. A federal judge is rejecting Trump's moves to punish the huge law firm WilmerHale. This is the third court setback for the White House in battles with large law firms, although some negotiated deals. Groups championing the arts are criticizing Trump's budget for killing programs like the National Endowment for the Arts, even after canceling more than $25 million in grants for things like arts education. Veronica Alvarez is with the nonprofit Create CA.
The four C's of 21st century job skills, critical thinking, communication, collaboration, and creativity, all of those skills are developed and supported by the arts. Unfortunately, usually when there's constraint of the budgets in terms of education, the arts have often been the first ones cut.
The president has also called for the Department of Education to be abolished, and his budget proposal ends programs to help migrant students and English language learners. The White House says those promote bilingualism and attract undocumented people to the U.S. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacific Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. As people burn fossil fuels, carbon dioxide is building up in the atmosphere, warming the Earth and making it harder to operate satellites in low Earth orbit. As these satellites travel around, hundreds of miles from Earth's surface, they dodge millions of pieces of debris.
Objects that have been created from explosions, collisions, and even just old defunct satellites and rocket bodies that have been abandoned.
Will Parker, a PhD candidate at MIT, says much of this space trash eventually falls out of orbit because the atmosphere exerts a drag force that slows objects down. But rising levels of CO2 are causing the part of the atmosphere where these satellites operate to become less dense, which reduces drag. So space junk will stay in orbit longer. The atmosphere will get more crowded, and satellites' risk of collisions will grow. In a recent study, Parker's team found that by 2100, the number of satellites that can safely operate across hundreds of miles of low Earth orbit could be reduced by as much as 50% or more.
This is concerning because we rely on low Earth orbit for all sorts of things, for communications, for internet, weather forecasting.
So changes in space will affect everyday life on Earth. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
About the Campbell. Did you... I got it. Yeah. Campbell appearing minutes. Hitting him.
Hello there. Is that Eddie?
Oh, hello. Who's that, Professor?
Yeah, man. What's happening there in England?
Oh, damn good to hear you, Helby. Nothing at all save a boring bloody music on the radio. And you know how one loves one's black music.
I mean, they're playing the same thing that they were playing five years ago.
Same old thing, dear fellow.
Shit. What so you ain't got no choice on the radio.
Well, no choice is no bloody choice, you know? So, Al, what are you doing at the moment yourself, old fellow?
I've got some new stuff, man. I wanna bring it out. I wanna get it played over there. I think the people ought to hear it. You know?
What is it like? What is it exactly?
Well, you could call it what you like. I don't have a name for it, but it sounds something like this. Have a listen.
All right. This is Galen Joseph Hunter. I am here in the studio in ICRA at Wave Farm with Gary Hostwit, director of ENO, with Greg Mills and Sydney Schutte, who are the co-owners of the Highway Drive-In in Coxsackie. And we're going to talk about all kinds of things, maybe first and foremost, a really special event that is a benefit for WGXC happening on Thursday, May 29th. Welcome, guys.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us.
Absolutely. All right, so what's happening May 29th? Many, many things, right?
Several movies, some music, other things. It's going to be pretty interesting, I think, just because it's never been done before. Like, I've never done it with the Eno documentary. I don't think y'all have done four different versions of the same film on four screens simultaneously.
Right.
It's going to be interesting.
All right. So to help you, dear listener, understand what we've been referring to just now. So Gary's the director of this pretty celebrated, unusual documentary about the musician Brian Eno. It's a generative project, which means that every time the film is shown, it's different than any other time. Do you want to say more about that, Gary?
Yeah, it's really, I think, organic to what Brian Eno's process is, using generative technology to help make the film and remake it and remix it and change it every time. It's actually the only reason that he agreed to do the documentary. He didn't want to have a normal biographical documentary made about him. And it was only till several years after he turned me down the first time that I came back with this idea to do a generative film and have it be created dynamically in software, and it could be different every time, and it's always a story about Brian Eno, but it's just a different story about him, you know, every time you watch it. So this was just such a great fun idea, since the film is different every time, that we could do four different versions of it but at the same time on these four outdoor screens. So you'll be watching a version in your car, but then you can kind of stick your head out and you'll be able to see three other versions happening right, simultaneously. So.
And perhaps switch to the FM frequency that belongs to another screen, theoretically. There's endless possibilities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then just this idea of just making it this amazing evening with Yuka Honda and
Fred Frith,
who is you know, legendary experimental guitarist and also Eno collaborator on multiple records, and then Cadalla Burrows, Sanjuro doing also other sounds. So it's going to be really fun, like at sunset with the live music, and then once it gets dark enough, we'll fire up four different versions of Eno.
Right. And we're so excited to be partnering with the Highway Drive-In, which, as you have gleaned, has four screens.
That's correct.
And is a pretty magical spot, a really amazing convergence of like traditional historic drive-in with like unique, more contemporary infusion of personality and aesthetic, I think. Like, tell us about how you came to be at the Highway Drive-In and be in the business.
Greg, you want to take that one?
Sure. Well, we bought the drive-in 2 years ago, so this is our third season. We were moving out here from California. The plan was always to come back to the Northeast, where Sydney's from. As we were coming back, we were like, what should we do when we get out there? We want to be involved in the community. We love film. We love, small business. And, I was kind of racking my brain about, what kind of business or situation we can get involved in. And the Highway Drive-In, a friend of mine sent the listing for it being for sale. And when Sid was out here looking for houses, I said, hey, instead of buying a house, hear me out.
Oh my goodness.
What if we bought this instead?
I was like, that's crazy. That's such a fun idea, but I don't think so. And then as time went on and we thought about it more, I was like, well, it could be pretty fun. And who needs a house anyway when you have four screens?
And Sid was actually out here, and I was like, why don't you go see a movie there and meet with the owners and kind of have like a, see if it's like really hits for you when you go there, maybe it's like seeing like a perfect house for the first time or something like that. And I was at work in California, and I was just like waiting for her to text me to tell me how she felt about it. And she called me, and she was just beaming. She was like, we have to buy this place. It's so wonderful. I love these people that had owned it since, you know, they started working there in the 70s and they bought it in the 90s and they just wanted to retire and they're the most wonderful people ever. And we were just like, we have to have this live on. So
it's such a nice story.
Yeah. It felt really, I was just thinking about this earlier today. Sometimes, when I was a bit younger, I'd say, how did you end up doing what you do? How did you find your way here? It seems like such a fit for you. And I always thought, oh, maybe I missed mine. You know, maybe it, what if I did? What if I never find that? And it's just, I was like, wow, I think I found, I think it just kind of like arrived at the right time.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And had you guys ever worked at a movie theater or run a movie theater before?
No, interestingly, we met working at a restaurant together. So we both had worked, you know, in retail and hospitality environments and lots of different things. Never a movie theater specifically. So weirdly, sometimes I also joke we run a hamburger stand in front of a, you know, in a field and we play some movies too. So the restaurant experience has come in very helpful. And the movie stuff has just, I mean, it's a passion for both of us, so easy to pick up.
And you're typically running first run releases, or tell us about what the roster is usually.
Well, with the four screens, we have a lot to play with, right? Mm-hmm. So typically a drive-in has one screen, maybe two. But we're lucky enough to have four, and that was the wherewithal of the previous owners who wanted to have much more flexibility in their programming. So they just built more screens. And so that's what, you know, gives us flexibility to do something like this. But we typically show first run on three of the screens, and then we have one screen dedicated to repertory. And we do like a fun, like classic series throughout the summer, or, you know, specific like fun benefit shows and stuff like that. So it's great to have that flexibility and to like kind of just use this one screen that's in the corner that's a little bit scary. Sometimes we call it like the horror screen, but we usually have that for just like, you know.
It's a great screen.
Oh, no, I love the screen. It's my favorite. But yeah, that's where we typically do some repertory stuff.
Yeah, I believe we've broadcast live from a Halloween kind of death metal show there in the history books at the beginning of the station. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, and your season runs like April through, or what's your season?
Yeah. So we typically start like mid to late April, and then we end like just after Halloween or right around there. Mm-hmm. It starts to get a little cold. But we like kind of go out with a bang with some spooky movies. And
nice.
Yeah.
And then the concessions, and you have a beer garden, right? Like for a listener who hasn't been there yet, who's contemplating coming to Eno, definitely coming to Eno and will return many, many times.
How could they say no to Eno?
Right.
This is the event of the season.
Which is at, well, I realize I haven't plugged where you can find out more information and get tickets, which is wavefarm.org/drive-in, no punctuation, D-R-I-V-E-I-N. But tell us what people can get their hands on when they're there.
Sure. So like I said, it's a, you know, kind of a classic hamburger stand. We have all the normal movie treats. We've got popcorn, we've got soda, we've got Raisinets and M&Ms and Twizzlers and all the good stuff. But then we also do some more substantial stuff like burgers, fries, you know, chicken tenders, jalapeno poppers, fried pickles, snow cones.
Fun.
Yeah, and
we got it all.
We actually have some vegan options as well. I always like to point that out because that's not always an option. Mm-hmm. So there's an amazing restaurant in Albany that does make their own like vegan chicken tenders and mozzarella sticks.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, so we have those too for all our vegan friends. And by the time of Eno, we will have the beer garden up and running. So we'll have some local wines from Eminence Road. Mm-hmm. And local beers from Return Brewing. So yeah,
fun time.
Lots of stuff.
It's I love the restaurant, snack bar, whatever area, because it feels like you're stepping back into, you know, I don't know what decade, but
yeah. There's a sign that past. Says "Lost in the 50s."
Yeah, that's what it feels like. It does feel like it's like a time capsule, like at least the structurally. So cool.
So when we went to the site on our most recent visit, in trying to plan some of the details for this event coming up on May 29th, we landed on this really fun idea of having the roof of the concession stand serve as the stage for the live performances. So imagine you pull into the drive-in, you park your car at one of the screens, you get out, and as the sun is setting, you're going to bear witness to the really monumental minimalist, if that's a thing one can say, Fred Frith, who's going to perform first. Well, actually, Sanjiro, a.k.a. Cadala Burrows, is going to be doing interstitial DJing. So he'll probably be, quote unquote, spinning something first. And then Fred Frith, who is playing the night before at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill, which immediately sold out. So for those of you wishing you could attend that event, you can attend ours. He's going to perform live from the rooftop of concessions, and then Yuka Honda will follow. Then it's going to get dark, and the screens will start simultaneously, and Gary is going to be rendering and one of the films live on screen one, correct?
Yeah, yeah. I'll be doing that. I will also be on the rooftop.
That's right.
With our computer systems making the screen one version. The what's fun is that the film always starts and ends pretty much the same, but then, you know, what's in between is just always different. I'm going to try to get it so that I can time them all so that it starts out, all four screens will kind of basically be in sync, and then they're going to go on their, you know, after about 5 minutes, they're going to go on their separate paths, but they're hopefully all going to come together at the end. So the last 3 or 4 minutes of the film will also sort of sync up. It remains to be seen if I can actually pull this off, but I've got some ideas, and it's going to be fun just to see it in this place and with these people, and just for such a great cause too, as WGXC. So.
We're pretty excited. Eno has been shown in, I mean, do you know how many countries now?
I don't know. I mean, over 150 cities around the world. I mean, we're doing our Japanese premiere in June. It was in theaters just all over the country.
It's just been a massive success. It was shortlisted for the Oscars. And I think how many weeks, 6 weeks at Film Forum?
It played for 3 months at Film Forum, a different version of the film every single day. So 84 different versions of the film. It's something that's never been done before. It's just the form of the movie. There's a lot of different ways that we can play with interesting releases. Nothing, we haven't attempted anything like this, the four films at the same time, but again, it's fun to be able to experiment, and the whole ethos of the project was just trying to kind of question why films are the same every time we watch them, and, you know, what can we do creatively with the technology and just the cinematic form to try to do something different. And it's also the perfect subject matter. I mean, Brian, you know, has always pushed the boundaries of technology and creativity, so. I think everything just sort of dovetailed together with this film, and I think that's the reason that it's been so well received.
And I love, I heard someone mention, maybe it was you, Gary, that I think the record at Film Forum down in the city was 28 tickets sold to one individual or something like that.
Yeah, people came back and saw it a lot, like an unprecedented amount of times. I think the record is 26 times. 26. One person.
My
saw
goodness.
It. Yeah.
And, you know, as I am out in the world talking about this event we have planned, you know, most people that I encounter have seen it, but then they'll say, but I only saw it twice, or I've only seen it once. And if there really is this, like this excitement or this understanding and embracing of this idea that you only experience the project if you see the film multiple times. And I think that's really true.
Yeah, yeah. And it is kind of like seeing a band, I think, in the sense that you might see them in Kingston, and a friend of yours might see them in Portland. And, you know, you can still talk about it. You'd be like, oh, what did they play for an encore? Or, you know, what was the set list? And I think it's similar thing with Eno, the movie. You'll get some sense of Brian's ideas and his story and his thinking. regardless of what version that you see, but you're always going to see something different that no one else, you know, saw in that order. It doesn't just shuffle the same material around in a different order. It's really pulling from this huge pool of scenes and footage and music, so that every version of the film, I think it's like at least 70% is different or can change.
Wow.
So it's always kind of pulling in new things. And even I've seen it, I don't know, a lot, hundreds of times. But even I still am surprised when I see two different scenes, you know, together for the first time. I start making new connections about Brian and his story every time I see these other versions. So it does something that that no film has done before, and that it lets you kind of come back and make new kind of revelations or connections, or you know, form a new story or get a new understanding of the subject each time you see it.
Amazing.
That's so cool. And is when you're live editing and you're set up there, I'm envisioning, you know, your own version of a DJ set up there, but yeah. I'm not necessarily sure what I'm going to be looking at, yeah, but I'm really excited to see.
It's not that, like, I'm really just kind of operating the software and I'm there as a sort of safety net in case something goes horribly wrong, because there's just a lot of processing happening in real time. I'm not, I don't put my own personal preferences into it, because if I started doing that, I may as well just have made a normal movie. You know, we've designed the software, we've spent years designing the software so that it is going to make the movie that it wants to make that's never been made before. And if I start monkeying with, you know, I really want to see that Bowie scene again, you know, and I want to see it every time. I mean, there are things that that are my favorites, but the whole point of the project is to take that subjectivity of the director, you know, out of it and just let the story kind of tell itself in all these different ways. So yeah, you'll see me up there. I'm ready to jump in. It's like, I'm like a helicopter parent or something. It's like, if there's a little stumble, I'm like, what, you know, ready to, you know, catch it and send it on its way if it screws up. But for the most part, it always works really well, but sometimes it does, you know, things
help.
Can go wrong. No, just it's doing a crazy amount of processing in real time, so it's it's good to have me there.
Have you done the live, I don't want to call it an edit now, having you just described it that way, but have you done that before?
Oh, sure. Yeah, we've like generated the film live on stage many times. I haven't done it in several months. And it's fun because, again, it's happening, you know, live. The experience of watching it isn't that much different than watching like a version that I've rendered out of the software and then, you know, sent to a theater just to play. But there is something about, you know, having it like made in the room or in the area,
on the roof,
on the lot, that is different. And I can intervene anytime in any way I want to, but most of the time I'm really kind of letting it make its film. Again, I've seen it so many times that you know, I could make a really good director's cut because I know all the great stuff, but again, that would sort of defeat the purpose of the of the project.
I feel like that was a really smart, I imagine in the editing of a traditional documentary or any movie, you might get a little at times sick of your material, but you know, you're always watching something new.
Well, or you're having to make decisions about, there's great material that you just can't fit in to the, just because of the time constraint. And that ends up being the challenge with a lot of documentary films. Like in this instance, I had over 500 hours of material with Brian, and it's all great. Or, you know, it's normally we'd have to get rid of 99.9% of that. And I was just trying to think of a way that we could keep more of that material kind of in the mix. Like, if there's something that you really want, it doesn't have to appear every time, but it might appear every 10 times or 20 times the film plays. So it's still in the picture, but it's you know, you can use a lot more material than a traditional conventional documentary would.
I was going to ask you about the soundtrack, the record release, which I do want to ask you about, but now I'm like wishing that you would apply the same philosophy to a soundtrack. Have you done anything like that?
We haven't. There was a, I mean, I forget, we went to Brian with the, like, I don't know, 80 or 90 songs that we use in the film, and he picked 17 of them, and they released those as a double vinyl soundtrack release. But then they also did these digital EPs that they were dropping on streaming services of bonus tracks that were also in. But I still don't think they've, you know, released all of them. But yeah, that is a good idea. We'll just do the generative soundtrack. And every time you listen to it, it's a different mix of those songs.
Although I will say the double LP is very, very nice. And I have listened to it many times.
Yeah, there was an interesting thing because Brian didn't. I don't know. It's not a greatest hits. It's not like a one of those types of records. He just kind of picked out his favorites from the different decades. And there's a lot of collabs. There's David Byrne things and Tom Rogerson and some other tracks on there too. So it's really an interesting selection.
So where would our listeners go if they were interested in knowing more about the record we've just been talking about or the film in general?
The soundtrack's on the streaming services for sure, and that vinyl release I think is. I mean, you can try to find it at record stores and online. It's still out there.
And there's a URL for the film, right?
Yeah. If you enofilm.com is the easy one that'll steer you to my website, and then Brian's got his own websites too. I mean. He just turned 77 a few days ago, and he's one of the most prolific people I've ever encountered, and he's still doing so much. He just had a book came out. He had a double record come out with B.D. Wolf, the collaboration. He's just constantly doing new things. So, it's kind of hard to keep track of. It's incredible. I don't know many artists who've had as long as a career as Brian's had and still kind of been vital and kind of really continue to experiment and change and keep pushing.
Great subject.
Yeah. And again, I couldn't just come with like a, you know, boring documentary idea. Had to be something different, and it's been so fun, but it's opened up so many I think possibilities in other filmmakers' brains in terms of new ways to think about how we tell stories cinematically and kind of creator focused ways to use this technology. It's exciting to see just all the things that are going to kind of spinning out of this film and the new projects that we're working on too. So it's exciting.
And it's like a completely brilliant business model in this moment where, you know, getting people in the theaters is a question mark. And now, like, you figured out how to get them in the theaters more than once for the same project. It's
amazing. It does turn going to the theater, sort of cinema, into an event for sure. And that's something that I think, you know, definitely post-COVID, I want more people to come back to the theaters. I know that there's so many incredible, art houses and drive-ins and, amazing programming happening around the country. And it's something that, like, I feel really strongly we need to support. And they're community spaces, you know, and places where we can just see so much amazing art. And it's fun to have people be excited. Like, if I'm showing the film and I'm saying, you are the only audience in the world that is ever going to see this movie, people like freak out. It's kind of like, again, it's something they've no one's ever said that to them at a theater before. So it's really fun.
And I think the specificity of the experience of a drive-in is also, you know, this really unique space that is so much more fun and memorable and than sitting in your bedroom with your screen. Yeah,
absolutely. I think that it's going to be funny to get certain people's reaction to walking around and saying that they were able to see four different versions of the same movie in the same night, which is, I don't think, has ever happened.
This is totally. be way farmish. I feel like you've done a really good job of creating a complicated,
but what's so interesting innovative. Is you could just walk around and switch tracks, and it's not like you'd be mixing your own movie, basically, depending on which screen you felt like standing in front of as you walked around.
We haven't. Wave Farm in our early days would tour around the world with these different sort of structures for transmission performance that we'd bring different artists into wherever we were. And one of them was called Radio 4x4. And it was four micro radio stations, each on a different frequency, and then boom boxes, all over the place set to one of the four frequencies. And the idea was that the audience would create their own mix of the four channels of performance.
Yeah,
in how they moved around the space, and
that's kind of crazy.
It's just dawning on me that there's a relationship here. Yeah,
there is. Yeah.
Absolutely. And then everybody who does that, who brings their own little radio and walks around, can say they saw a true one of one.
Yeah,
they mix their own on top of the other mixes.
So when you come on May 29th, after going to wavefarm.org/drive-in, you may want to bring your own portable radio in addition to your car. And that's what I am really imagining, that this event is going to be a really kind of excellent mix of crowds intermingling in person, like during the live performances and maybe during the films too. And then that more traditional sitting on your picnic blanket or car in your car and watching.
I'm excited to see how people treat the space and what they do. I mean, obviously I love watching people watch the movies, but I also love before the movies start, when it really is just like a community space, a family space, people playing Frisbee, or when we're open Wednesdays and Thursdays, it's a little quieter during the week. And we had this group of kids that would come play kickball. And then as soon as people started to show up, they'd respectfully pack it away. But just, people
That's lovely.
Enjoying the space. Yeah. And it's cool because normally, you're watching your one movie, but this is a special night.
Mm-hmm. Have you noticed, you said this is your third year, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's not a huge amount of time, but are there changes that you've noticed in that time or observations? Like, are you seeing the demographics that are our residents changing in your customer base at all, or not so much?
No, we really do have such a strong community and a strong following that has been, it's going back generations, right? So a lot of people that used to go there as kids are now have kids and are now bringing their kids. So it's it's been in Kiksaki since 1951 and never missed a season, not even during COVID.
Wow.
So it's so we're coming up on our 75th year, which will be next season.
Oh my gosh.
So it's pretty, what has been interesting since we took over is seeing people new people coming from out of town, and they'll hear about it somewhere, or, and they'll show up and not even, they're like, so what do we do?
Never been to a drive-in.
Yeah, exactly. And you're like, oh, well, welcome. Thank you for coming. And, does your radio work?
Yeah.
And you have to keep your lights off, and
how do I hear the movie is the number one first timer question.
Right. Yeah. And we did have an inquiry with someone asking if they had to have a car, and we said no, you can bring a radio and a picnic blanket.
Yeah,
but curious to know how that person's going to get to the drive-in.
Yes, they're going to jog Forrest Gump style.
Sometimes we have people. We have a pretty long driveway between the sign and the box office, and sometimes I'll be sitting up there and somebody will be walking down.
That's
their
cool.
Parents dropped them off. They're meeting their friends.
Right.
Or,
right.
We had one kid who I think was not maybe of legal driving age, who came one summer on his four wheeler all the time.
Yeah, he would just show up and be like, "Can I come in and see a movie?" I'm like, "Absolutely, buddy."
I appreciated the dedication a lot.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
What about with newer car technology? Have you had fun jump-starting hybrids that have, or anything like that?
Definitely. Yeah, there was one the other night, actually, that they were they couldn't figure out how to open the hood. It's an electronic component that would open the hood. Ultimately, what I've noticed is there seems to be always a workaround, but that, sometimes it takes a while to find it.
A lot of people don't know how to turn off their lights.
Yeah, this right.
They've never done it before if they're newer cars or something like that. So you got to go over there and help. There's a there's a little hack with like an e-brake situation that needs to happen. But if you can't turn, but one thing we will tell you, if your car dies, we will jump your car. Do not call your parents. Do not call AAA. Like, just come to the snack bar. We have a massive jump box that's always charged. And we, if it's a busy night, we're looking at like 15, 20 cars that we're jumping. Yeah. So we're very used to doing it. And it takes us
panic,
5 minutes.
Don't be embarrassed. That
help is on
the
way.
Yeah. I can't tell you like how many times we're up in the box office. And then all of a sudden, like a mom and dad will show up like angrily at like 11:30 at night. And I'm like, they're like, we have to jump our son's car. Like, they could have just told us, and then they'll get more angry.
That's so very funny. What's happening next for you? We'll start with you, Gary. What's going on?
Well, like I said, Japan and Europe, there's more screenings. So we're still out there, I mean, showing the film. It's been over a year now of touring it, and there's still so much demand to come and show it. So there's more screenings. We've been doing some interesting streaming experiments with it, because since it's different than normal films, the normal streaming platforms can't really handle our technology. So we're innovating some new ways and ideas to stream it. And then, like I said, we're working with other filmmakers now as sort of technical consultants, and bringing our software, Brendan Dawes, who's the digital artist that I collaborated with on to make the software system. He and I are now working with other filmmakers and networks to, experiment with other ways to apply this technology and this approach. So there'll be more generative films. I really want to do just like a blockbuster, generative blockbuster, because it would be so fun to have like a Marvel film or something
that's
different in every theater, and just have people freaking out, like going to, cinema to cinema, just like trying to watch different versions and kind of piece together the story. So more experiments with that. And then I have some other film projects of my own that are on the horizon, both normal films and more generative projects. So just keep playing with these ideas.
Excellent. And how about Greg and Sydney, anything on the horizon you want to talk about or share?
Yeah, I mean, I think we talked a little bit about our retro features. Can I announce that?
Of course.
Okay, great. I was like, I think it's out there. So for this summer, we're going to do sci-fi. So sci-fi movies, kind of a little bit of everything. And I think
cool.
We're going to have 7 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of spread out over the summer.
Awesome.
We're going to be announcing those movies shortly, and we're really excited about it.
So. Yeah, that's going to be a fun one. And then the end of the season, we always have our annual horror fest called Dead Till Dawn. It's going to be the 14th season that we're doing it there. So it predates us. But
that's the one that we broadcast live.
Mm-hmm.
It must have been like the station's 14 years old. So it must have been, yeah.
Yeah. It's great. People come from all over. They love it. It's a 3-day horror film fanatic fest. It's wild.
Normally we do double features unless a movie is really long, like Mission Impossible.
Mm-hmm.
But they play like 4 movies a night. So that's why it's Dead Till Dawn. It's a really long night. And I'm always impressed. I think like horror fans are some of the most dedicated film fans, or certainly the most dedicated at the drive-in. People stay for all 4. I could never. I'd be asleep after 2.
I love how you guys right now have Sinners and then a double feature with From Dusk Till Dawn. Mm-hmm. Rodriguez vampire, so it's double vampire.
Double vampire.
It's amazing.
Double vampire, double all in one night, kind of crazy.
It's a great pairing, though.
Ah, thanks. I actually wanted to ask you, since we are, showing at a at our drive-in, your film, is there a double feature pairing that you would?
That I would pair it with Eno.
Don't mean to put you on the spot.
That's a great question. Yeah, gosh, I'd have to think of it. I mean, there are films that I think somehow have influenced this movie that maybe not overtly, but, things like, Chris Marker's Sans Soleil, or, obviously like the Koyaanisqatsi, trilogy. There's a lot of films that I could think of that would do it. You know, we would normally just do it again, show it again in a different version. You just go like back to back. That's how we do it, since it's a different movie. We've done a lot of those.
That's actually fantastic. You're like, well, it would be a different version of the movie.
Exactly. There you go. But there are films I don't know that this has some DNA probably from, but in this new way. So
that's awesome.
There are things that influence me, I guess, as a filmmaker.
And where do people go to find out what's playing at the Highway Drive-In?
Yes, they go to our new website, mm-hmm. www.highway, that's HIWAY, driveinny.com.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
And Instagram, Facebook, you know, call our phone number and listen to the voicemail, drive by the sign on 9W.
Freshly painted.
Greg's excellent. Really proud of the new sign painting.
These are important things.
They are. Yeah. They are. It looks really sharp. You were right.
Thank you.
All right. So one last time, I'll say that you can find out more about the May 29th event at wavefarm.org/drive-in. The doors are going to open at 7, and then the sunset performances are at 7:30, Fred Frith, 8:15, Yuka Honda, Sanjiro, who's Kadala Burrows, is doing interstitial DJ sets, and then at 9 p.m. after it's gone dark, Eno times 4 different versions all at the same time. Thanks so much for being here, guys, and
thanks, Galen.
We'll listen to some Eno.
Thanks, Galen.
Thanks for having us.
Okay, cheers.
Thank you. just solitary firework flashes over a fathomless sea.
To a place that's only ours. Please make it.
And when she wakes up, you're already